And welcome to Community Kitchen. Of course, the weather in the last week has just been confusing, for want of a better word. We're dusty, we're smoky, we're dry, we're not getting any rain, and of course, it's our gardening week. So I welcome Gary from Kookaburra. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Annette. I'll just add one thing into your weather prediction. We actually had a frost Thursday morning last week.
I put a jumper on this morning.
Yeah. Can you believe it? A frost, and then it was 35 degrees by the end of the day. No wonder gardens and everybody else and the wildlife are all going, what is going on?
Travelling in yesterday, I saw a ute covered with shade cloth, double. But then I realised what it was beehives.
Yes.
So they must be tucking them away too.
Well, what's happened with a couple of things with bees, with all this smoke and dust in the air, very few of them will fly. They'll stay because they don't like smoke anyway. And all that dust, it's just like us walking down the road and the wind and dust with no protection on our eyes or anything like that.
Mm.
It's the same with the bees. And plus, with any flower, there's not a lot of flower out there at the moment because of the very dry conditions. And as a result, any flower has very little pollen or nectar in it.
So what are they living on?
Ingenuity.
Yeah.
They have to be smart. They have to be preserved. They will be eating some of their honey stocks to preserve themselves. The shade cloth you saw over the beehives would be to take that intense radiating heat off the hives, and also this southwest westerly cold wind hitting the hive, because bees keep their hive at a constant 34.2 degrees Celsius, regardless if it's cold or it's hot. And to do that, they fan with their wings, and of course they have to, you know, fuel up with honey. That's their energy to keep it going.
I just can't quite understand what's going on. I mean, the dust that we had, it's like the Western dust storms, and of course everybody, you mentioned when you were talking that you had a weekend involvement with the fires. We've had, you know, the Bribie fires, so of course that does dry out the environment, and then of course on top of this you've got these big dust storms, and I don't think we've got any rain predictions in the next few weeks.
It's looking very bleak. I think what people have got to say is, okay, if you're hoping for the rain or you're hoping for the politicians to come to do a rain dance, you've got to look after yourself. And what I think is look after what you've got.
Yes.
And that is a lot of watering, and those people who are on rainwater like myself, it is very, very difficult.
But even if you're on town water, you just can't afford it.
No, I spoke to someone the other day who had a water tank filled up, well, not filled up, a third put in, and that cost them $350, and they've got a young baby. And, of course, you know, there's constant washing, and they're scratching their heads on what they can do. Fortunately, we're not in Stanthorpe, where it is catastrophic over there at the moment.
But that comes across also to Yarraman and Narangbar, Nanango, sorry, I think.
Yes.
Because that's in that Toowoomba regional area.
Yes.
So therefore, when you think about that, the restriction, I mean, I think it's, you have to do it. There's no other answer to it. But I can't see how we can save our water as much, because a lot of us have automatic washing machines. It's usually plumbed in. That water, once upon a time, you've had six buckets in the laundry tub, and you'd be putting the water in there. You know, there's...
we have a nice big bucket that when we shower, we catch our grey water, and that's what we water all our pot plants with.
Okay.
And because we use, you know, organic soaps and shampoos, etc., and they have no effect on those plants. And that also you can use your grey water for the ornamentals, because you don't want to lose those, because a lot of those are, you know, bee attracting and other good insect attracting, and little birds. Like one thing what we all should be doing in these conditions is make sure we've got some sort of bird bath or water, something out there for the wildlife, because they are really hurting. And these conditions, you know, unfortunately a lot perish in these fires, and some people might be seeing they're getting all of a sudden they've got a bigger wildlife population. That's because other areas, you know, don't have any food for them.
So, Gary, really, unless you have a good amount of water and you know, maybe it's a good time for the gardeners to put their feet up.
Well, it is. Or the thing is, if you can get access to mulch, The thicker the mulch, the better. And, you know, we really need to try and keep that moisture in the soil. For some gardeners, you know, if you haven't got water, there's not much you can do about it. It's just, unfortunately, you can put your feet up. But I think what we should be doing is going, okay, this is an extreme season.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to overcome this next year or the next season? You know, when we start planting out our eggplant and things like that. Because preparation might be the key. And the one of the keys of water retention is mulch, of course. But for every 1% of carbon that you put into the soil, it increases the water retention rate to 16%.
I remember that. And, you know, it, very interesting. I was representing the Taste Pavilion down at the Moreton Bay Food and Wine Festival, which was just absolutely fantastic. And I was talking to one of the suppliers from Wooluga, and Cece is a rosella grower. I mean, what a beautiful colour in the field that would be. And she was saying that she boils the rosella, of course, the seeds, everything. That goes back to a friend's, I think she has sheep. They eat that because it's soft. But she puts all of her, I guess, waste from her production back into the field. She has put a ton in every time she picks, she actually processes a ton. So she said that over the time that she's been growing rosella, she has mulched a metre over that entire area.
Yes, and what has she observed any differences?
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
Because she's saying that with her rosellas, of course, she's picking all the time and she's freezing. So therefore, her rosella bushes are now up to 2.5 metres high. Now, I grew some just from fluke last year. And, I mean, I love the flowers, I must say. I just think they're one of the most beautiful plants. But she was saying that because she's picking all the time, they're growing. So, therefore, yes, they're up to 2.5 to 3 metres.
Yes, and that's right, because what's happening there is the water retention is really high.
Mm.
And the nutrition that's in there, the plant can absorb it easily. And that's why you get really good plants, healthy, big, strong. And that's what everybody should be trying to achieve, is the more we put in, the more we're going to get out.
So, Gary, if someone doesn't have that avenue, just say, for example, you've got someone who's got, say, some sugarcane or something growing, you know, you see this, a lot of people do different gardens and that. If you cut that and just lay it on the garden, just as a block, like a banana leaf, same, that type of thing, eventually that's going to break down, isn't it?
Yes, it will break down very well. And the interesting thing you mentioned about banana leaves, if you've got actually banana trunks, a lot of people chop those up into half-metre length because the banana trunk has so much water inside it.
Oh, good idea.
It's a drip feed back to the garden, and that is a great way. It takes a while to break down, but people should look at it as a drip feed water system. Right, and a lot of people have got it under their nose and don't realise. And arrowroot does exactly the same.
Mm.
The arrowroot plant, it's full of water. You chop them in and you just lie them around your garden, and all that water's being put back into your garden, particularly in these conditions.
That's
and
a great idea with the bananas, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Bananas are a great feeder. They love compost and so forth. And when you look at those trunks, if you ever nick one, it's amazing how much water just can come out of that.
I think the one thing we always have to remember is when that rain does hit, I think there's going to be a lot of dormant seeds just sitting in the garden now. And they'll survive, won't they?
Yes, they will. You've got to look at sometimes some of the native Australian plants need fire to germinate. And, you know, they sit dormant for decades and then they come good. Because a fire has gone through. And some plants, like I've seen the clover is trying to push itself up at the moment. It's very low, but there's flowers and that's feed for the bees. And if that gets an inch of rain, 25 mil, everything will just freshen up straight away. But what we've got to do is, I think we've got to start looking that okay, in the short term, I can't grow anything, but what am I doing to make sure I can grow food later on? You know, have I improved my soil to have, you know, more water retention, you know? And that's done naturally. That's just done naturally by composting and worm castings and things and putting back as much material as you possibly can.
So if someone's got access, like I notice a lot of the big companies now have their cardboard, for example, sitting out.
Yes.
If you want to take that home, you can actually put that cardboard down, wet it down a little bit, and then put your straw on top of that.
You can do that. If you've got really nice soil, it's a great way of doing that, because what it does, it brings moisture to the underneath of the cardboard and it brings the worms to the surface too, because they're protected. They're in a cool, moist environment and they'll start working the soil. And because the drier it gets, the more exposed, the worms go deeper, right? And they go away from the surface where you need them. So cardboard, and the great thing about those things, but don't use glossies or those plastic-covered wine or computer boxes.
Mm-hmm.
It's cardboard, and people shouldn't fear about the ink on them now. They are soy-based. They're not industrial toxic chemicals. They're actually soy-based.
See, newspaper used to be easily accessible. But I was somewhere the other day and the question was asked, there was probably about 50 people, put your hand up if you read. I think there were there were three of us who actually read a book or a paper, or most people now are using their phones or their pods or their pads or whatever they're using. So therefore, even going to a shop and saying, well, look, do you have the old newspapers that I could get off you? It just doesn't happen.
No, and that's why we've got to start looking at other resources that are there. One of the things is, I know a couple of people who've got all their family and friends who don't garden, I'll take your newspaper and cardboard.
Yes.
You know, you've got to start collecting things in a different manner. And as the war on waste grows in momentum, we'll see a lot of things that we will, you know, took as the norm will no longer be there. The packaging will be all breakdown type packaging, you know, be cornstarch, etc. And we've got to become inventive and resourceful to find, okay, what else has got there? Now, one of my workshop participants told me the other day that she's been saving her toilet roll in her cardboards since she did a workshop with me. And she said, I've got hundreds. It's amazing how much toilet paper you go through in a house. And before, it was going into the wheelie bin.
Yes. Even your egg cartons, you just got to rip off the plastic.
That's
Gary,
right.
We're almost coming to an end, but November, you've got a small space workshop coming up. What's that about?
Well, a lot of people who approach us are saying, look, I'm living in an apartment and I've got a little patio, or I've got a veranda, or I'm a little house on a really small block and I've got, you know, a couple of square metres. How can I grow food? And what we call it is small space gardening, crops in pots, because mainly people are using, you know, planters, pots to grow their food in. And because we're in Queensland, growing in pots is a little bit different than down south, because irradiating heat here is extreme and dries them out. And what we show people is a technique of how they can grow food and have it rotating, so they've got something all the time.
Mm.
And the location we're going to do this is in Caboolture. It's up on our website at kookaburraorganics.com. And it's actually in the a backyard of some friends of ours, Norrell and Steve. And they have converted in the last 18 months. And actually, you know Norrell and Steve.
They
came to the workshop at your place.
Yes.
They have taken it on board. They have got wildlife coming in. They've got biodiversity, and they've got a really small space, and they've got things growing everywhere. And it's a great site to run a workshop on, so people can actually see a couple who are actually doing it.
And
they weren't gardeners before this.
Oh, they weren't?
No.
Oh, they're very knowledgeable too.
You're very knowledgeable in other things, and also Narelle's very good at preserving things. She just preserves some capers. Nasturtium seeds, which were used as capers the other day, someone brought along. And they've got a couple of unique little ideas how to save space and growing your food.
Excellent. Thank you, Gary, for joining us. Now go on to the site, Kookaburra Organics. Have a little look, because there was driving through town now, you see there's so many units. So that would be perfect to put a couple on there. You've got your lettuce, tomatoes, some herbs. Absolutely gorgeous. Now, Gary, you'll be away in October. We're going to bring Lise on board.
Yes.
And, of course, that's another one of your workshop participant people who's now become sort of involved. And Lise has been on the show. Enjoy your time away, and we'll be talking to you in November. The date of that workshop again?
Is Tuesday the 12th. It's a midweek one.
That's a reminder before, but you better get online now and book, because they usually go out pretty
quickly,
don't they?
Well, it's already 40% booked, surprisingly enough, and I haven't even promoted it until I just promoted it with you.
Fantastic. Have a great break, and we'll be talking to you in November. Thank you,
okay.
Gary.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Community Kitchen. Of course, the weekend just passed has just been a wonderful example of local produce, enthusiasm, some very creative, innovative suppliers, great cooks, and just like-minded people. So the Moreton Bay Food and Wine Festival was a wonderful success. And I must say, having the opportunity to MC the Taste Pavilions was a great experience. And it was wonderful how you could see there was just this great blend of people who, you know, using the combinations, we had wonderful salad dressings and chutneys and marinades and olive oils, and it just went on and on and on and on and on. And then by the end of the first day, you could start to see that each little stall holder was actually promoting and helping the other one out, because someone had used a little bit of their chutney on their cheese, or maybe a little bit of quince and rosella paste on a different cracker with some other type of cheese, and olive oil on top of a lovely salad green. And we had, it was just a great experience. So for those who went, I hope you felt the same as I did about it, because I think these things are wonderful for our communities. And I think it's always a way that you can learn things. You find that someone may have a great product, but they're having trouble marketing or packaging. And this is where you will find that a group of people who are like-minded. A lot of people are just the small stakeholders at this stage. They're not sort of great corporate suppliers. And I think a lot of them want to keep it like that, but at the same time, it has to be innovative and it has to be effective price-wise. So all those things sort of were encapsulated in the weekend, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. The styling was fantastic. The setting was great. So apart from the wind, which wasn't too bad, actually, it was a great weekend. So jumping from that, I know that spring's in the air. We've still got those beautiful fruits. I know that strawberry season's still around. And it's interesting, isn't it? I know that I'm always out and about scavenging to see what information I can get for free where other people can do it. Of course, I do use the supermarket cookbooks to inspire you to actually pick one of them up and have a bit of a cook and have a bit of an enjoyment. My sister and I, as the two old ducks, we've been doing our sago or tapioca pearls for a long time now in our demonstrations, because we actually try and bring to the table a lot of those memories that we have of food. And we always used to love lemon sago, or Mum used to make pineapple sago. We've altered a little bit now, and because a lot of people are dairy intolerant and things like that, sometimes we might do some with coconut milk. And I noticed in one of the magazines this week, or this release, I think it's a spring one, that they've done a layered cups. And, of course, that is easy to do, because I find that the best way to do my tapioca or sago, you've got to look around for it too, guys, just as I'm digressing there, but it's usually in the health food section of a supermarket. Looking for a local one, I know that the health food shops have them, have the tapioca or sago. Just have a little poke around and find that, because it's just beautiful. So I usually soak mine for a little while, just while I get everything cooked and sorted out of what I'm doing. I know that Jen will sometimes just go straight in and cook it. And usually you find that about 50 grams of tapioca pearls, you probably need about, I don't know, 1.5 cups of liquid. I just don't have my cookbook with me. But what you're looking for is the fact that you're going to be adding the tapioca and then stirring often and just until it's tender. Now, we used to always call it frog's eyes when we were kids, but you'll find that it becomes transparent. It's, if you've still got that little hard white pearl in the centre of it, it's just going to be yucky. Have a taste. That's what I do. I've got a, went to one of the markets one day and there's an elderly gentleman there who's part of some wood group and he had all these great little wooden spoons and I bought a few of those. Great for testing. You don't burn yourself on the stainless steel or the metal. So if you do, if you're at a market one day and you see someone who's whittled a couple of little baby spoons, great for testing. So going back to the tapioca, if you're doing it with some coconut milk, I'll sometimes, or coconut cream, if I'm using cream, I'll split it with a bit of water. You can do it with regular milk. You can do it with frozen berries. I know Lover Berries have got their beautiful frozen berries. You can just put a whole big pot of strawberries or raspberries frozen into the pot, put the tapioca on, maybe just a little bit of apple juice and stir that. That is just gorgeous. But thinking of a layered dessert, if you were to put a layer of the tapioca and then some chopped up strawberries that you might put those with, maybe even a little bit of balsamic, another layer of tapioca, you could do a lovely strawberry yogurt. Keep within the themes and the flavours. Mangoes are coming soon. How glorious would that be to have some mangoes? You could maybe put a little bit of orange juice within the tapioca just to give a different flavour. This is what it's all about, experimenting. These are the things that are joyful about food, that we get the opportunity to have a bit of a play and to just bring up flavours we like. I love strawberries with just a drop of rose water. I had a demonstration just recently. I just took some organically grown rose petals and Sarah from Basilia, she talks about this. Be careful because you don't want to be using roses that have been sprayed or anything like that. But Basilia, they have all of their organic flowers and herbs and they're all edible. But if you had a rose bush that you hadn't used any poisons on, just grab a couple of the flavoursome ones, throw it in with your strawberries and it is just absolutely delicious. So that's another sort of situation. The picture that I'm looking at from this free mag I got, they used a kiwi fruit. You can use whatever you want. You can layer it with granola. You can do lots of different things. I think it's just a matter of just having a little bit of experiment and a little bit of fun in the kitchen and, of course, great in the lunchbox. We'll be back shortly. Of course, we've talked to Gary to date. And remember that, the water retention, start collecting all those little bits of newspapers and make sure it's not glossy, old egg cartons, whatever you can possibly get and start popping them in the garden because, as you said, the worms will come up, the cardboard will hold the moisture and you've got a great situation happening. The weather's not good at the moment, but we can get through that. And also every 1% of carbon increases that mulching and the water retention by about 16%. So that's excellent. We'll be back shortly and we're going to be talking to one of our sponsors, Sal from Caboolture Property Maintenance. We're going to be talking about watering systems for your property, whether it be small or large. We'll have a bit of a chat. We'll be back shortly. And welcome back to Community Kitchen. We've had a great morning this morning. I think the weather really is something of main conversation at the moment, and Gary's given us a few good ideas what we can do with our garden. But our next guest is going to sort of advance on that a little bit and help us out when we're thinking of effective watering systems. So I welcome Sal from Caboolture Property Maintenance. Good morning.
Good morning, Annette. How are you?
Very well. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's very difficult at the moment to try and actually keep that moisture in the ground. And I mean, you get out there with the hose and spray and next minute it's all gone. So you sort of have been involved in doing your watering systems. What do you think is an effective way for people to actually to look after their gardens?
There's different approaches that I usually take, especially the watering time. A lot of people water in the morning or afternoons and we find that the water evaporates very quickly like that. So the best time for watering is in the evening when I find that the temperature's just starting to drop is when I water the plants or turn the irrigation systems on, and that water will retain overnight generally and into the morning.
It's lovely too, isn't it? Because it's nice, one of those relaxing things. You've been at work and you're coming home and then you can get out there and actually potter around the garden for a little while.
Yeah, that's right. I enjoy it in the evenings and just keeping water retention in mind, especially with this drought that we've got at the moment. I'm finding that if we water too early in the afternoon or in the mornings, then it will evaporate very quickly.
So even with this wind and everything like that, if you get up early, you've got that wind, then you've got the heat, so that it's sort of wasted, is it?
Yeah, it's just not as effective as the evenings, especially because it's so dry that it just saps the moisture out of everything. A good mulch will assist to keep that water in the ground. If you've got a nice thick layer of mulch, about 10 centimetres plus, because that breaks the heat of the sun. So we've got that sun beaming down, and when we water through it, it sits underneath that mulch, and the mulch will take the initial heat from the sun.
You know, there's so many different systems that you see, like there's drippers, there's little light sprayers, there's inline, there's blip, 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 blip. Is it a matter of actually saying, well, okay, if you've got an orchard, for example, what is the best system to put into your orchard?
Different types based on the garden bed that you're trying to build. So I'm a true believer in trying to keep it tight, the garden bed. So we don't want too many garden beds spread out, because that's just going to require extra pipes, extra watering. It's a case of working out, you know, what are your key plants or vegetables, and keep them together, and then you can set your watering systems up in that little area. Especially times like this when we don't have a lot of water, I tend to let plants take control of it themselves. Especially natives don't need a lot of water, so I'll really water them. Unless I see them starting to struggle, then I'll give them a bit more water. But generally, I'll bring it back to what really needs that water and the garden beds that really need it. Sometimes I'll even transplant plants and move them to areas where I can keep a nice tight watering system.
Gee, they're really suffering in the heat. I was talking earlier about the fact that I've passed a couple of trucks with the beehives on because, you know, they don't like this particular windy and smoky weather. It's been dusty, smoky, and the whole lot seems to be happening at the one time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's been a build-up to it, though, over the years. We've noticed it getting drier and drier. Out west, they've certainly been suffering a lot more.
Now, tell me a little bit about the misties. If you've got, you know, I know that a lot of people say that, you know, if you can just mist the plants and that, it just seems to be great in the foliage. But do you lose a lot of moisture into the air when you're doing stuff like that?
It's a good thing to do occasionally. If I see the leaves starting to get dry, I'll give it a bit of a mist. Generally not. If you know, it only needs a small spray of water and the leaves will like that.
And, you know, when you're doing veggies and things like that, you know, because you're rotating your crops and you know, working within that actual bed, do you find that it's effective to have sort of a built-in system, or do you change it with the actual change of your veggie beds in your season?
Generally with the irrigation system, once I set it up, it stays like that, and I'll bring in different soils, I'll rotate the soil around, but the actual dripper and irrigation that we initially set up will stay like that unless I need to change it.
But I found that one particular system that I used, which I thought was quite effective, I'd actually used untreated timbers and made sort of block beds, and then I just ran a line along the top of that bed and it sprayed back onto it. So the plants that needed that extra moisture, I put at the front, and that seemed to work quite effectively, I felt. The only thing is, of course, I was using water from a dam and all of my little sprayers kept getting blocked, and that was one of the biggest pains, because you had to continuously go along and sort of tap them out and sort of clean them, and that was a problem.
Yeah, if you start seeing that, it's good to put a filter in line somewhere, maybe somewhere near the pump.
Yes, exactly.
And secondly, I'd keep the pipes out of the sun. So a lot of people put the pipes on top of the wood, but put it behind the wood if you can, or just cover it with a bit of mulch so it doesn't get that heat, because that'll heat the water up inside the pipes if leave it open to the sun.
Of course it does. And another thing I found the other day, I'd had one of those, you know, what we've had for 100 years, those little green ones with all the 101 holes in them that you can put in your garden. And with this sun, I'd put it on the fence just because I was mowing and messing around, and it got so brittle it snapped. I thought, now that's hot when you've got that sort of temperature happening all the time.
Yeah, the UV light also damages the hoses.
It really has a bit of a play on it. So that's interesting. So, you know, this time of year, you're recommending that we sort of give it a good spray in the afternoon and the evening. Keep that mulch on, and that should sort of help things. Do you know any whispers about any rain in the future?
I did check recently, and it looks like something might be coming through in a couple of weeks' time, but nothing certain until we get closer and we see some moisture in the air.
You know, you really think about the farmers this time of year, don't you? Like, we've got so many strawberries out at the moment, and, you know, last year they had a bad year, and now we've got this wind and rain, sun and stuff like that. You just wonder how on earth they survive sometimes.
Yeah, well, it requires a lot of water, and this is where keeping our garden beds nice and tight will see us through the drought.
I think that's a good idea. Never sort of considered that as much, sort of using that more blocking effect for when you're building your gardens. Something
absolutely,
that you do, yeah.
Yeah, blocking out that light and making the most of the water at hand, because it doesn't last long. A 25,000 litre tank within a month and a half could be gone if it's not used right.
Yeah. Well, look, Sol, thank you very much for coming on to the Community Kitchen. It's our gardening day today, so it's always nice to be able to spread the news and to enjoy that and spread into the community. So thank you once again for coming on to 101.5.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much, Annette.
Thank you.